This is the Red Shirt Geeks podcast, which makes its home at redshirtgeeks.com.
And so it begins.
Files accessed. Transfer of data complete.
Commencing.
Ladies, gentlemen, and invited transgendered species, by Grapthar's Hammer, we are the Red Shirt Geeks.
Red Shirt Geeks!
Shooting the proton torpedoes and, like, make us go that way.
Red Shirt Geeks!
Very bad feeling.
Shut up, Wesley!
Red Shirt Geeks!
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Red Shirt Geeks!
Hide behind the mound. Dead bars.
Make it so.
I'm Lars D, the pseudo Kiwi.
I'm the illustrious Patrick M.
I'm the insatiable Alex.
And I'm Dave.
You don't have a name yet because you're our special guest. You're our special fourth Red Shirt Geek today for our opening podcast. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
One of these days I plan to earn a name.
Yeah. Maybe. Perhaps.
Maybe.
Perhaps.
If I wasn't expendable.
Exactly.
You have a last name, Dave. You have a last name. In this episode, we talk about our brand new podcast, The Red Shirt Geeks, with our very special guest, Mr. Richard Hatch.
Actually, we could just talk about The Red Shirt Geeks now because it's our new podcast and it's awesome. And it's got us talking to cool people and talking about great stuff. And it's all shiny and new. So let's just get right to it.
But first, let's do what's in the spotlight this week.
Red Shirt Geeks!
2 minutes my light.
In this week's 2 minute segment, we're talking about San Diego Comic-Con. That's right, boys and girls, it's that time of year.
Comic-Con!
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Comic-Con! That's right. We're talking Comic-Con. It is by far one of the, if not the biggest, comic convention in the United States, where thousands upon thousands of geeks descend upon the city of San Diego, where they sit, watch panels, check out cool stuff that I'm not going to be there for.
Cosplay. For the love of God, there's cosplay. Just go and see the cosplay.
Yeah, if nothing else, you got to go for the cosplay.
If nothing else.
The thing is, you know, I want to take the word cosplay and, you know, what immediately jumps to mind does not say costume play. To me, it's Cosby play. I mean, it would be like a bunch of Bill Cosby impersonators.
Everybody in Cosby sweaters? Oh, awesome. Makes me inside.
Now, that would be a convention worth seeing. No, seriously, we have a fantastic lineup. There is so much to see. We don't have enough time to go through all of it. However, just
everybody on the West Coast that's awesome is probably going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, there.
Richard Hatch.
That's right. Richard Hatch. Our guest, Richard Hatch, will be there. Also, our good friends from Star Trek Action, our Alec Peters and Tommy Kraft, will be there. They'll actually be at the Star Trek Prelude Axanar premiere, which is on. They'll be there on Saturday the 26th for the premiere. And unfortunately, none of us can be there, which kind of sucks. But hey, from what I understand, this con is going to be fantastic.
And from that, pretty much just go check it out if you're going to be there. If not, well, hopefully we'll have some good information once the con's over.
Red Shirt Geeks!
And for our opening episode of the Red Shirt Geeks podcast, we have a man who needs absolutely no introduction. And it is an immense honor for us to have our very first and special guest to this podcast, Mr. Richard Hatch. Thank you so much, sir, for being here today.
Yay, Richard Hatch! I'm excited! Hear what this guy has to say. Chris, amazing guy.
Yes, incredibly amazing guy. Please, stop. I kid. You know, again, thank you so much for coming on the show with us. You know, you're our very first guest in this new podcast. Red Shirt Geeks is aiming to be a home, not just for people who are into sci-fi, but a place for anybody who has any kind of real passion for anything they do, because we all know that geeks aren't just sci-fi, they aren't just fantasy, they aren't just gaming, they aren't just anime. They are everything. It is whatever you have a passion in, it makes you a geek of whatever that is. So again, it is, like I said, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us tonight. And we're going to start off the interview with Patrick, the illustrious Patrick M., who's going to lead us into our roundtable discussion. Go ahead, Patrick.
So the first question, in looking at some of the things we were looking at to prepare for this, notice that your current big thing outside of Axanar, which of course we're going to get to best for last, is the acting school. Can you tell us just a little bit real quick about that?
Well, I'm doing like a whole bunch of things. I'm actually I finished a pilot with Malcolm McDowell, a cowboy, called Cowboys and Engines, which is a steampunk pilot. Takes place in 1887 with cattle boats to Mars. And I play this really cool Clint Eastwood kind of character. Also did this Mad Max presentation for a new pilot with Vernon Wells from Mad Max. And that's another project that I'm very, very connected to. And then what I've done for the last 30 years in between acting gigs, writing, directing, and I'm doing all three, is I get invited to universities, colleges. I teach, lecture, I do workshops on writing, on filmmaking, on self-esteem, on communication, on public speaking. I do a whole bunch of different things, but I just started recently an ongoing acting class. I've taught many classes over the years. I've done showcases for the industry, which I used to direct. But I've just started a new acting class, an ongoing class here in Studio City at the Two Roads Theater on Tahunga Avenue. And I do that every Tuesday from 2 to 6. And I can only say that my gift is I don't just teach one technique, a Meisner technique, or, the so-called method. I use all of it. I use a little of this, a little of that. I learned all those various techniques. But I help actors more than just learn a technique. I help them to learn how to access their talent, how to connect more deeply, more profoundly to material, how to get their insecurities and all the issues that get in the way of their talent, how to work through that so that they can use more of their gifts, and to bring the most powerful performance that they're capable of. And that's kind of what I do. And I do that as a director. I do that as a teacher. And I'm obviously writing and developing projects as well. And part of what I do is to empower artists to learn the business side of the equation, to protect the artist side, because too many artists end up going nowhere because they never learn how to make things happen for themselves. They're always dependent on everybody else. So I teach a lot of different things, a lot of life skills. I actually used to do Tony Robbins type seminars because I was always interested in the what it is that stops most people, so many gifted, talented people, from achieving success. And some of the most gifted, talented people are the ones who struggle the most. So I've always been researching what gets in the way, how to work through it, what are the various ways of, building our self-esteem, our skill sets, our ability to take our creative vision and take it out there and bring it to fruition. So I bring all of that into everything that I do.
Well, my second question is going to be kind of the insight into what makes a good actor. I think you kind of sort of answer that. Kind of knowing how to apply things.
Yeah, well, look, actors are gifted in different ways. Some actors, they have this incredible ability to step into different rhythms, different way of speaking, different body language, to step in and inhabit a character that's very, very so-called different from them. And yet they can really connect to, if you want to call it, not just the physiology of it, not just the externals, but they can tap into the deep core, the heart of who that character is, and they can bring all that to life. Other characters play characters that are a little closer to themselves, but they're still extensions. They're still, they're not exactly who they are, but they bring, a lot of themselves to those roles. And you never see them speaking in a different rhythm or a different kind of language, or they don't even have an ability to deal with other languages. Some actors are gifted in different ways, but that doesn't make an actor less talented. They're just talented in slightly different ways. But the best actors are the ones that can step out of their head, take a concept. They read a script, they read a character breakdown. They're able to step out of their head and to take it into a much more deeper, intuitive place where they connect to the heart, the soul of that character, what motivates that character, what makes and drives that character to be who they are in the world. And they're able to connect to that on a deeper, more intuitive, more emotional level, not an intellectual level, although the intellect is always included in everything that we do. So again, we all have various, if you want to call it, aspects of that talent. Some have more, some have less. But I find it not only an extraordinary process for the arts, but I find acting is a process for life. I honestly do. I think an acting class can help everybody grow, learn about more about themselves, about life, work through all the issues that get in the way of actually using your talent in a more fulfilling way. And through acting schools, people sometimes segue into writers, directors, producers. Sometimes they become presidents of the United States. I mean, acting schools really help you develop a lot of really important skills in life.
That's pretty interesting. Let's go ahead and give Alex the next question, because you mentioned the Cowboys and Engines earlier. I believe Alex has a question about that.
Sure.
Yeah, I followed that pretty closely, and I had a question. What was it like working with Walter Koenig and Malcolm McDowell on that project? Because it looked like it was a lot of fun.
Oh, it is. And believe it or not, we had a trailer last year that they threw up. It was very put together very quickly just because they wanted to play something at the convention. But they spent almost a year because, you know, getting the special effects right, getting all those parts of it orchestrated. So you really make that element, especially in a retro futuristic genre such as steampunk, which is an underserved marketplace, by the way. There's just not enough of that. I love that whole Jules Verne, you know, kind of world, Victorian, Western, and then the futuristic elements of that. But they're still developing that. It's supposed to be finally done in the next couple of months. So I'm hoping that we'll get a chance to play it at a few conventions, the full presentation. But it was a lot of fun to work on. And I love Bryn Pryor, the director. Really smart, very intelligent, very gifted director. I love the character that he created for me. And I just love the whole visual look of it. I mean, there's just something about that world that is really, I find, extraordinary. Sometimes in this ever-growing, very quickly moving world, I sometimes think we've lost something. You know, we've lost a sense of style, a sense of, quality. Sometimes in our hurry to get places, we lose things, and that kind of steampunk era takes us back to some of those cool, you know, times when style and the way the clothing and the dress and the creativity that was involved in it, I thought was quite extraordinary. And there was also something in the culture where there was just more of a certain level of respect for things that somehow I think we've lost. But anyway, I love the culture. It was great working with Walter. I worked with him on Inalienable, which if you haven't seen, you definitely should see it. He wrote it. I got to play one of the most challenging characters I've ever been, had the fortune to play. I come to think they had a whole slew. Walter was in that. Marina Sirtis was in that. They had a number of Star Trek actors in that. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out. Let me know what you think. But I've worked with Walter on another project, too, where we kind of played this. It was a short that basically dealt with the stupidity of war and how we seem to keep playing out the same scenarios over and over again. And he wrote it, and I can't even think of the director at the moment. He'll hate me. But anyway, so I've worked with Walter three times, and I love Walter. He is an extraordinarily, believe it or not, funny, intelligent, smart, gifted guy who one moment looks like he's 106 years old and the next moment he's 15 years old doing a tap dance. He's really an interesting fella. I love Walter. And Walter, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. But anyway, it was a great experience.
Thank you.
Did I answer your question?
That was perfect. Yeah, that was perfect.
Okay.
I think David's going to have the next question.
Yeah. Oh, man, I've been dying to ask you this since I found out we were interviewing you a few weeks ago. Huge fan of Battlestar Galactica, both the original series and the reboot. And I've been dying to know. I mean, you played Apollo in the original, And of course, you played Tom Zarek in the more recent reboot. Right. Now, they're in my opinion very different characters. I mean, you've got Apollo, very military stand-up guy, and then you've got Tom Zarek, who I could just picture sitting at home listening to Bob Dylan. You know, was it your idea to play
smoke
two?
The doobie. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, was it your idea to just play a character that was like a polar opposite almost, or was it, you know, somebody in the studio that wanted to put you in a different light, or how did that all work out?
What can I say? You know, there's multi. I'm quite a multifaceted person, and I have to say, I'm very political. Sure. And I don't care what side of the equation you're on, if you're in the middle, to the left, the right, doesn't matter to me. What pisses me off is that most people buy into sound bites, and most people never thought all the way through anything that they bought into or believe. Usually people don't have the time to research it, or they're only looking for evidence that supports their belief or their judgment or whatever they bought into it at some point in their life. But I love it to have a really open dialogue about anything, because I think it's really healthy, and I think we would all learn from it. We'd probably learn that we're probably all more in support and believe in more of the same things than we don't, and yet we focus on everything we disagree on. But anyway, as Zarek, I cannot even tell you how pissed off and angry a man I was. I can see why Derek would have wanted to kill, but not the council. He would have wanted to kill, you know,
and
Adama and a few other people, because he basically was, honestly, and it's really, and not only that, it upset me. And again, I love playing that character, and I know it was very different from Apollo, but for me, Apollo was an honorable man that would have. He's the guy that you would go into war with, the guy that would watch your back, the guy that's not afraid to make the right decision. But then I found the funny part of it is, as different as those two characters were, I found that Zarek was similar. He was not afraid to make the hard decisions. He was not afraid to do what he believed was right. And he basically thought things through. He had seen the very worst of humanity. He had watched humanity, just like in Germany, when everybody, all of a sudden, you know, can you imagine falling into killing all the Jews and everybody moving into that camp, and probably 20 years later wondering how in the world could we have ever become Nazis? You know, people go to war and end up killing people, killing civilians, killing babies, and good people do bad things sometimes in war and under extraordinary circumstances. And in Battlestar Galactica, we realize the best of us is capable of doing the worst in various moments, and that some days we're the heroes, some days we're the cowards, and we have to live with both sides of the equation. And that was what was so extraordinary about Battlestar. It explored holographically the full dimension of human possibility. And as Zarek, again, those combinations were, here's a man that had lost everything for what he believed. And what he believed was not some, you know, totalitarian, some idealistic society. He wanted true democracy. He wanted to have a fair game with fair rules that made it fair for everybody. And yet he lived in a dictatorship where people were thrown into prison for not agreeing with the government. People were killed, and he stood up against government. And by the way, don't they always say that the history is written by the winner? And in Braveheart, you know, you have, you know, that character basically is relegated to be, you know, Darth Vader by the English. And the truth was, anybody who ever challenged any government was looked at in history as the bad guy, or anybody that challenges authority makes most people uncomfortable. People are, even when they're in disagreement, most people are afraid to stand up for what they believe, and when somebody does, it threatens them. And here was Zarek, who had been through it, watched people die, was willing to die, and was fighting for the right thing, and yet got no support. I mean, elections were rigged on that thing. People were thrown in jail who didn't agree with Rosalind Adama. And here's good people basically putting people in jail and throwing away democracy because they did the same thing that every dictatorship wants to do. And by the way, in post-apocalyptic type of circumstances, governments drift left or right into a dictatorial relationship with the public. Why? Because the public, out of fear, turns over their power, and they want the great white father or the great, you know, blue father or a green father to take care of them and make the decisions for them. And that becomes more of a dictatorship and not a democracy. And that's what happened on Galactica. And my character was constantly challenging and making that government accountable, and yet was always thrown on the side, always given a rotten deal, and always made out to be the bad guy when they were doing far more bad things than Zarek ever did. And so my thought was, how interesting, because they showed the human side of those characters that, and I understand, I love those actors and I love those characters, but I can see why the audience would think of them as the good guy. Because once you kind of get to know somebody and you connect to them, you bond with them, you're forgiving of all their faults. But Zarek, you never got to know. You never got to see the backstory, his motivations, so you always assumed he was doing the bad thing. But I played him as honorably as I played Apollo. But it was two different characters aspected kind of 180 degrees away from each other, and yet in many ways connected.
Well, the truth of that is, and I think myself and most people that I've talked to about that situation, is just from the way that you played Tom Zarek, I think most people were actually rooting for him. Well, I know I didn't like Laura Roslin.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think anybody really did.
Well, you know, that character, I mean, honestly, I mean, she didn't listen to anybody. She wanted to do her own thing. What was the use of having a Senate or a Congress when she looked at them with disdain? She had no respect for the Senate, you know, for the Congress, for the quorum. And my only friends, and I wish that scene had been played differently. Honestly, there's two things in Battlestar. Wonderful actors, wonderful writing, incredible production. I think it's the best thing I've ever really truly seen, the best sci-fi show ever in history. I thought Ron Moore and David Icke did an extraordinary job with such an extraordinary cast. But my two biggest frustrations, and I know getting screen time is hard when you have that many wonderful actors and characters, but my two biggest things was I would have liked a few extra moments that would have showed you a little bit more about how challenging it was for him to kill the quorum, that to kill your best friends for something you believe. And see, when you've lost people you love, when you've had to make the hard choices, when you've been willing to make decisions where some people die in order to make some people live, which was the whole thing with Gaeta and Zarek. Basically, if you remember the scene in the prison, I went, I said to him, I said, understand something. If we do this, and you have to commit to this, if you decide to do this for the right reasons, just know people are going to die. Because in a coup, you can't go halfway. You can't go two-thirds of the way. You got to go all the way or nothing. And if you believe in what you're doing is going to save lives, then you have to be able to take out anybody that stands against you in a coup. If you go to that extreme mechanism. Otherwise, and why are we going to a coup? Because guess what? Because Adama and Roslin took away any kind of recourse. We couldn't do it politically. We got thrown in jail if we didn't agree. We were left either accepting their way or the highway. And you know something? It takes balls to be willing to throw your life away for something you believe. And so, you know, for me, those two characters were heroic. They were willing to go. And by the way, in that story, and people forget that, most people on the fleet agreed with Zarek and Gaeta that the Cylons, how do you allow a culture that is programmed not to know their own programming to have access to your technology when they've killed millions, if not billions, of your people, and they don't even know when they're Cylons, they don't even know they're Cylons until they know it, and their programming kicks in, and then they go do some horrific thing. So, again, it was just funny to me. People always go, oh, my God, you killed the quorum. And I go, yes, yes, but do you take that into consideration, what a courageous act that was if you were going to save thousands and thousands of people? By actually having to do something, and for him, he wasn't taking out his enemies. He was having to take out his best friends, the only people in that show and on that ship that supported him, you know, was him. Because he actually stood up for the quorum. He fought for their rights and for their sovereignty and for their equalism or balance of power, which is what democracy is supposed to be, you know. And I thought, you know, even going into the political agenda, and I know I get intense about this, but this touches a nerve in me, not just on Galactica. It touches a nerve in me in our government and the fact that I don't think people realize that the game is not played fairly. We don't have a fair set of rules that everybody plays by. and that, you know, we have a facsimile of democracy, and maybe it's better than other countries, but that doesn't make it right. You know, my thought is everybody should, if they can get rich, great. I have no problem with money. I love the fact that people can go out and be as successful as they can be. I just love a fair playing field and a fair set of rules for everybody. And that touched the nerve of Zarek for me. I really, honestly, I was so pissed off as Zarek going through what he had to go through. I really identified with him. I connected to him emotionally. But I will have to tell you that probably a lot of the other actors on Battlestar especially, they all got very deeply connected to their characters. And whatever happened to their characters affected them personally. It was an amazing experience to be on that show.
Oh, it definitely showed just the connection in the characters. And honestly, I could listen to you talk about Battlestar Galactica all night. But we're here to listen about Axanar. And I know Lars has a ton of great questions he's about to ask you about that.
All right, great.
I will try to keep it reasonable. I will sort of just bring us back to Galactica a little bit just for a second. It's actually more not just Galactica. It's an overarching subject we talk about your passion as an actor, as a teacher, about being able to find that something inside somebody that allows them to become another character, another person.
Yeah.
And one thing I've always noticed is that the best actors, the people who play the best roles, are the ones that convince you without even realizing it that those people aren't real. You know, you don't think about, you know, when we look at Tom Zarek on the screen, we don't think of Tom Zarek, you know, we don't think it was Richard Hatch who goes out and pays his bills and buys his groceries and pumps his gas. We think of, you know, Tom Zarek, who's orchestrating a military coup against Adama and Laura Roslin. So, again, you know, the ability to be able to tap into whatever that character is allows you to transport your viewers into a completely different mindset. It's not even about just simple entertainment. It's about allowing them to become personally involved and invested in the universe, in the world in which you are helping to create. You know, I've been very privileged to have either worked with or spoken to a number of people who are in the industry. And one thing I hear all the time is that one thing that they love the most is being able to create something that somebody will remember forever.
Yeah.
And you have these different universes. You know, we have Battlestar Galactica, and you have these characters who, no matter what people think of whether it was a good idea to go this direction or a bad idea to go that direction, people are still investing themselves into it. Same thing with Star Trek. Star Trek is probably one of the most heated discussions that we have in some of our talks because of the way that J.J. Abrams took the franchise as opposed to what Gene Roddenberry had envisioned with his universe. So now we talk about Star Trek Axanar, and again, you know, we've a few months ago we were able to talk to Gary Graham about his involvement as Ambassador Sabaal. Recently, we talked to Alec Peters about, you know, his project of his, this being his baby, and also his admiration for you as his acting teacher. And we just sit there and we're just completely focused, and we're enamored on this concept that this person we're talking to isn't. It's almost like when I look at you, I'm not looking at Richard Hatch. I'm looking at Tom Zarek. I'm looking at General Khan, and that fuels that passion for whatever it is I like. So, you know, when we talk about Star Trek Axanar, you know, what was it like for you to step into? I'm guessing a role that was not really like anything you had done before, because the Klingons are so proud of who they are and what they do. You know, we've all seen the trailer that came out for Prelude to Axanar, and we see you playing Khan as this. I see him as a very wise warrior. He doesn't seem to be just somebody who is killing for the sake of killing or honor for the sake of honor. He seems to be exceptionally well-versed and wise into the universe in which he is a part of. What was it like for you to come into that role and try to portray that almost fatherly-like figure?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that, you know, call it what you will, samurai, the warrior spirit, you know, for me, Klingons. I've always loved Klingons, but I always thought Klingons were getting, we tended to think of them sometimes as wild Neanderthal, you know, out of control, you know, kind of military, you know, type of beings without conscience, without, you know, even though they would talk about honor and all that stuff, they always were these wild kind of, you know, that primal kind of warrior. And, you know, when you really look at some of the renditions of some of the actors playing some of the Klingons through history and through time, you realize they've been played many different ways. And some of those renditions, you know, they were quite classical, quite, you know, if you want to call it refined. You know, they were Shakespearean. They had a penetrating intelligence, and yet there was still that warrior resolve, you know, very much like the samurai, you know, where their whole life code, the warrior code, you know, which is something that if you don't understand it, you don't get it, then totally cool. But it's something that, you know, I have always gotten. And when I saw Last of the Samurai, I mean, you know, with Kutsumoto, and when I was talking with Alec Peters, we actually talked about, you know, some of the elements of Kutsumoto, you know, very much to me was what General Karn was. He had this knowledge, this wisdom, this understanding of the larger picture. And even in World War II, when we got a chance to see Yamato? How do you pronounce that general's name?
Yamamoto.
Yamamoto, sorry. You know, he almost realized, you know, here he lives by the warrior code. He's governing the military and has to make decisions, you know, that are going to lead men to war. And yet he saw the larger picture. He realized we might be awakening a beast with America. He saw the larger picture and what might happen. And yet he still had to fight the war honorably, because that was what the task that was before him. In a sense, I kind of felt that with Karn. If Karn could have chosen, I don't necessarily think at this time in his life, after what he had been through, he would have chosen war. But I think what he realized was that he had no choice but to go to war, and so he was going to fight it as smartly and with as much wisdom as he possibly could. And because on some level, I think generals, you know, great generals, whether it was the War of the South and the North and the Civil War, you know, great generals in a weird way can probably get together in the afterlife and have a cigar and share a lot in common, because, you know, they both basically had to take on the burdens of war, the burdens of decision, the burdens of losing, and the decision making that could cost the lives of thousands of innocent, you know, warriors. And I think that is such an incredible kind of a role to play. It's not just a general. It's a man who must make these life and death decisions and live with the burden of those decisions. And I don't care what anybody says. If you talk to anybody who's ever made those kinds of decisions, they carry that with them the rest of their life. The burden of the people that died under their command, you know, of the decisions they wish they had never made, and yet they've got to make those decisions. And not too many people are capable or willing to be in those positions where they make those kind of decisions. So that it brings out, and it takes an extraordinary man or woman, you know, in those situations to be able to deal with it, to live with it, and to somehow come to terms with it. And so I think a man who's been in war as long as Karn has been, and Garth, you know, they've been there. They've seen it. They've been through it. They worked their way up as soldiers. And they're very, very interesting men, very complex men, multifaceted, multi-layered, and it's almost Shakespearean in terms of the challenge of playing a character like that. And I have to say, you know, if I was playing Hamlet, a lot of actors, or King Lear, a lot of actors will tell you that sometimes it takes playing that character two or three times, and they still don't feel that they fully, you know, got that character yet. It's that deep, that profound, and I find Karn that fascinating. I feel like I've just barely begun to explore who Karn is. And of course, everybody has their concepts of what a Klingon is or what a Klingon should be. But I want to show any race that has the level of technology and the accomplishments of this race of Klingons, they're not stupid Neanderthals. They are highly intelligent, highly motivated, disciplined, you know, culture. And would obviously have, you know, they do have that warrior spirit very much like the 300, you know, that's woven through them in terms of that faith, putting yourself on the line, being willing to test yourself, you know, under battle in life and death circumstances, and almost welcoming that challenge, that beating of the chest, that beating of the drum. Yes, that energy does permeate a warrior culture, but it's been brought to a higher level of sophistication. You know, and I wanted to get into more of that quality with General Karn. And so, like I said, I feel like I've only begun to get to know that character, and I can't wait to do the movie and to delve more deeply and more fully into where this character wants to take me. But I feel like I've just barely begun to touch into this character. And yet, I have to tell you, the reason I love playing Karn is because I do feel, just like I did with Zarek, I feel a deep connection to Karn. I really do. I can't tell you why. I don't know where that comes from. Call it another life. I don't know. You know, but I do feel this deep connection with him, and I can't wait to play him. And I'm blown away that Alec Peters saw that in me and was willing to take a chance and cast me as General Karn. So anyway, that's where that is. That's the name of that tune.
I'll tell you, look, as Dave said about BSG, I could talk to you forever about Star Trek. I will leave us off with just one quick little.
By the way, can I say one real quick thing?
Please.
Do you mind? I want to say something. I have to tell you, and I know everybody touts the projects they're in, and it's the best and the greatest that's ever been, and all that stuff. But I have to tell you, I have been in this business for almost 50 years. I've been on big movie sets. I've been on all size productions with some of the biggest stars. I cannot believe how this production has been put together. The thoughtfulness, the intelligence, the willingness to really take the time to research, ask the right questions, bring together the right people, the right crew, the right everybody, and to take the time to do pre-production the way I wish everybody would do it. Everybody's in a hurry to roll that camera. And then by the time they get to rolling that camera, they are so well organized, so well set up, that now you have the opportunity to do your best work. And you feel supported in doing your best work. And the fact that I believe these fan films have continued to grow and get more and more professional, more and more skilled. And I think XNR is taking the fan film into the indie film level of such. I mean, honestly, the production value, the scope of the production, the quality of the writing, the acting, the producing, everything. I think this is going to be a benchmark, a transition in how people ever look at these fan films again. And I think, again, it's just going to raise the bar. And these other Trek productions, which have done a great job, are probably going to be motivated by what they do in XNR, and that'll take them to a new higher level, and then whoever else will be motivated by them, and they'll keep pushing the level and the quality higher and higher until Paramount may have to take these productions seriously and license them and make it possible not only for the actors and everybody to get paid, which they do now because of the Kickstarter campaigns and donations, but also because maybe they'll license these projects and allow them to have some, you know, of a run maybe online in that forum where the actual product, the production can actually generate revenue, you know, that can be profit sharing with the studio. And I think they may realize this would be a great partnership. I'd love to see that happen with Battlestar. I think that there's a whole group of fans, millions of fans. Firefly, Babylon 5, Farscape, Star Trek, Battlestar, this, that, you know, that are hungry for these kinds of productions, and the studios aren't making them anymore. I don't think it's just the volatility of the of the budget. I think the mindset is, you know, sci-fi still is an onus to the studios and networks, even though it generates so much money for them. I still think it's a genre they don't fully love or embrace. And so here, the fans now can be part of supporting these kind of productions that can become ongoing networks online where we can get this kind of programming, not only with the shows we already love, but creating new shows where the fans now can be the ones who are the decision makers. They vote with their dollars. They can support. And nice, because now with $10, $20, $30 contributions, they can support a show that they love and want to see more of. And now the decision to leave a show on or take it off will be in the fans' hands instead of some executive in a boardroom.
Amen exactly. to that.
Amen to that. We've seen so many wonderful programs.
Go off the air. I know. I agree.
I could listen to you talk. I don't think I could. I think I could just basically I could write off an entire day and just listen to you talk about things. I just want to say that it has been an absolute pleasure being able to see some of these projects, not only that you're working on, but also the fan productions that we're seeing across the board. Because as you did say, people are putting a lot more time, effort, passion, and money into making sure that the pre-production is done right, so that when they roll camera, you know, that clapboard comes down, everybody is at their mark and they are ready to bring their A game.
I've been lucky to I'm telling you, Brim Pryor and my friend Doogie, who directed After the Harvest, and Chris Gossick, who was this young Ridley Scott, phenomenal artist with such a visual sense. I mean, I think you're going to hear a lot from these guys. Honestly, I have been so lucky to be involved with so many gifted, talented people. And Alec Peters has blown me away, because not only is he the extraordinary producer who has done what I can't believe he's accomplished with this production, with this X&R project, but he comes to my acting class. We try out scenes and we work through things. Chris comes, you know, and we work through it. But I've seen a man who really, he's a businessman. And he's gone from being the businessman to putting himself into a venue where most people would be terrified, especially businessmen, where he has to kind of go into an area that he's not normally comfortable with, you know, to step out of the head, more into that more intuitive, emotional place that the actress has to learn how to go. And I have never seen a guy so courageous on that level to explore that part of himself and be willing to take those risks and then step up. And I know sometimes you think it's ego when somebody wants to be in a production, but he's put the time, the energy, the work, and the commitment, and put the balls behind it. So he deserves everything he gets. And he's grown so amazingly in just the 6 months I've worked with him. So, I mean, this whole production and everybody involved in it is inspiring me.
Fantastic. It's very inspiring to hear you talk about it. Thank you so much for your time, for your knowledge. We hope to be able to speak to you again sometime in the future.
Anytime.
We very much will be following the productions. We know that you'll be at San Diego Comic-Con. We know that you'll be at Houston Con. I've been able to very much be able to liaise with your media producer and media director a lot lately. So we're hopefully going to be able to follow you a little bit on your journey. And
we're going to Vegas as well. We'll be X&R, and we'll be there at the Vegas Trek show as well.
Yeah, Star Trek Las Vegas. Fantastic. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you again so much for your time.
Thank you, guys.
I am very immensely humbled by your by your contribution. Thank you again so much for being on the show.
Back to Zarek and the goddamn Dama and Rosalind.
Everyone else.
You're here. Hey.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Richard.
All right. See you later.
Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Red Shirt Geeks.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of the Red Shirt Geeks. I'm Laz D, the pseudo Kiwi. Come visit us on redshirtgeeks.com.
I'm the illustrious Patrick M. Find us on Twitter at Red Shirt Geeks.
And I'm Sweet Beard of Zeus Alex. And we're on Facebook too.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm still Dave. And I'm pretty sure we even set it up on MySpace. And we still got those videos coming out on X Hamster. Did we get the checks for that?
No! No! That was your eyes! No!
Oh, Jesus.
No.
Am I the only one that got stiffed on that, or was it, you know?
Oh, I'm pretty sure everybody got stiffed.
Don't use the word stiffed involving that.
Oh, God, no. Oh,
please, no.
This is what happens when you we are allowed to run unchecked, okay?
Oh, God.
So, folks, look, what we really want for the episodes is please give us your feedback. Let us know what you want us to talk about. If there's anything you want to cover subject-wise, anything you want us to
give us up. Your ideas.
As long as it's not an ex-hamster.
We want your brain thoughts.
Oh, my God. Yes, okay. Give us your brain thoughts. Thank you.
Give us your brain thoughts.
Or you can just email us at rsgshow@redshirtgeeks.com.
Because we are the Red Shirt Geeks, where every expendable hero has a hope.
Red Shirt Geeks!
The Red Shirt Geeks podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. Permissions beyond the scope of this license may be available at redshirtgeeks.com.